I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, what is happening right now in our country? Why does an unelected and unconfirmed billionaire have access to your tax information and to your Social Security? Why is President Trump issuing clearly unconstitutional executive orders? Why are people being put in charge of critical agencies like the Department of Defense, the Department of Health and Human Services, and more? Why are these people obviously not qualified, and they are potentially threatening your well-being? In her new book, journalist Catherine Stewart takes us inside the world of the conspiracy mongers and Christian nationalists who want to burn the nation down to the ground in order to rebuild it to fit their warped vision. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. What is happening right now in Washington, D.C., under the orders of the world's richest anarchist, Elon Musk, and President Donald Trump, they're making every working-class American's life poorer, less healthy, and less safe. Musk and Trump are wrecking the economy with tariffs like the one for Mexico, crippling the public health system as we're facing the deadliest flu season in 15 years, an explosion of measles in West Texas. They're threatening and planning to invade and occupy Gaza, Canada, Greenland, while firing federal employees like at the FAA, raiding the records of the IRS, messing with Social Security, while also pushing a mass deportation plan that will expel a major part of the law-abiding immigration American workforce. All of this will impact your life and make it worse. But why? Why is this happening? Why is this the Musk-Trump agenda, or is it? We're joined by Catherine Stewart. Her new book is Money, Lies, and God: Inside the Movement to Destroy American Democracy. And Catherine, welcome back to The Source.
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
So why is this happening? What is the Musk-Trump agenda? What do they want? And talk about it in the terms of your book, your reporting, what you have seen, what you have uncovered.
Well, thank you. Listen, they told us in advance of the election what they were going to do, which was pretty much smash the federal bureaucracy, or what they call the administrative state, which they view for ideological reasons as interfering with their agenda. You know, so as you mentioned, we've seen this stream of transparently lawless executive orders to fire federal officials, to take away a right to citizenship that's written into the Constitution. They've committed to weaponizing federal agencies such as the FBI and the CIA, purging them of disloyal individuals. And it really is a means of conducting what some of their key thinkers talk of as a second American revolution. You know, I titled the book, my book, which is out today, actually, Money, Lies, and God, because first, money is a huge part of the story, meaning that huge concentrations of wealth have destabilized the political system. And this is a movement that is working on behalf of its super wealthy funders. And we can really talk about that. They really want to eliminate expertise in government and a functioning government because they want low taxes for the rich, or no taxes, minimal regulation of businesses, no interference with their businesses' abilities to, say, pollute if they're in polluting businesses, or but at the same time, they want protective policies for their monopolistic businesses. Second, lies or conscious disinformation. This is another huge feature of the movement. We're just seeing so much disinformation out there. And number three, God, because the most important ideological framework for the largest part of this movement is Christian nationalism. This is a movement that weaponized religion, exploited religion in order to get the rank and file on board with an agenda that is going to impoverish them.
So how do you know this?
Well, I've been studying this movement for 16 years now. Money, Lies, and God is my third book on the topic. The way I do a lot of my research is, you know, I read the writings of the people who, the leaders of the movement. I go to their seminars and watch them on YouTube. I read their books. But I also spend a lot of time in sort of right-wing and far-right spaces. I've always thought you can't really know what's happening with this movement unless you're in the room where they're talking to one another, not just messaging to the, you know, the general public. So I've spent the last 16 years going to right-wing conferences and strategy gatherings and, you know, pastor gatherings. A lot of the way they, you know, one, I think, underappreciated feature of the movement is they gather very political pastors or even conservative-leaning pastors into, they gather them together and they give them materials and tools, very sophisticated data tools for, you know, turning out their congregations to vote the supposedly biblical values that they care about, which, and, you know, listen, a lot of American Christians do not see this movement as remotely connected or consonant with their understanding of the faith. But they'll say, oh, you've got to vote on abortion. Public schools are woke indoctrination factories that are trying to change your child's gender against their will. They spread a lot of lies. They deploy the politics of outrage. They know if they can get the pastors, they can get the congregations. So they give the pastors these materials that, you know, get the pastors upset, you know, because they go against their values. And then they use the tools they're given to turn out their congregations to vote in in enormous numbers.
This to destroy democracy. But they need democracy in order to gain the power that they now have.
Well, they're using some of the tools of democracy to dismantle American democracy, such as voter turnout operations and messaging materials. But they're also, frankly, spreading lies and disinformation in service of undermining democracy itself. You know, have you ever heard of Reawaken America? It's a kind of, they've done them in Texas. They've done them all over the country. They're gatherings at mega churches. They draw thousands of people. They're organized by people like Mike Flynn and others who are some of Trump's most trusted allies. One of the Trump sons usually turns up to speak. You know, thousands of people in these places. They've done them, you know, dozens of them all over the country. And they air all kinds of conspiracies, the Great Replacement. They talk about anybody who is remotely not on board with the MAGA agenda, including many conservative Republicans who are just, frankly, not total Trump loyalists. They call them demonic, satanic. They say we're in a state of emergency. Any loss in the political arena is, you know, would be catastrophic for our nation. Donald Trump is a savior. He's God's choice. He's got God's hand on his shoulder. So we need to elect him to save the country. But the kind of conspiracism is really intended to fracture our democracy because, you know, they know if you can separate a large number of people from the facts, it makes them easier to control and to believe, like, in these big lies, this idea that, you know, Donald Trump is a saint and never did anything wrong. So, you know,
I mean, they don't believe that, but they think that he's a vessel of some sort, even though he is flawed.
Well, they often compare him as a King David or a King Cyrus, an imperfect ruler through whom God chose to enact his will. But when you go to these events, I mean, many of the rank and file really do believe he is a savior. They really do believe he has God's hand on his shoulder. There, when you look at the imagery at these gatherings, you'll see a lot of pictures of like Donald Trump with Jesus behind one shoulder and an eagle behind the other, you know, with an American flag in the background. It's very Christian nationalist, which I should say is sort of the conflation of a certain understanding.
Right. And so to kind of capitalize where we're going with this, the reason why things are happening right now in Washington, D.C. is that to bring about this vision of a Christian nationalist nation, that if you are part of their tribe, then you will be well rewarded. And if you're not, well, you're going to be on the outs. We're going to take a break here. We're going to continue our discussion about the book Money, Lies, and God: Inside the Movement to Destroy American Democracy. This is a fact-based heavily reported account of what is happening with the movement that is controlling America right now. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and we'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, speaking with Catherine Stewart. Her latest book is Money, Lies, and God Inside the Movement to Destroy American Democracy. Well, we knew all this stuff actually before the election, Catherine. We knew that this is their, that there was a movement. This is their agenda. This is how they do things. It was all out there. They weren't hiding it. And when we told people that this is what they wanted to do, and we told people that Donald Trump was going to do these things, he got voted in anyway. So what's up with that?
Well, I think we have to look at the big picture. You know, people may have been manipulated through disinformation, but we also have to note that this is the reason they're doing it is, you know, all of these extremist moves will first and foremost serve to entrench corruption. This is a movement that doesn't believe in democracy. Many of its key thinkers have said that democracy no longer works. They prefer more authoritarian or monarchical forms of governance. If you look at the leaders of the new right, many of whom are now occupying positions in the Trump administration, people like Russell Vogt or Darren Beatty or so many others, or Michael Anton, they've really kind of given up on democracy. And
but the
some
people,
of them,
when they were, the, I don't know if exit polls are to be believed, but when they did exit polling and they asked people, why did you vote the way you voted? Why did you vote for Trump this go around? They didn't quote those names. They didn't say all these things. They talked about the price of eggs. They talked about illegal immigration, concerns about public safety. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets. And also about transgender concerns. So that's what drove the votes.
That's true. And so I think when we're analyzing this movement, we need to distinguish between the leaders and the rank and file. You know, when you're talking about the rank and file, you're talking about a very large number of people with different interests, different exposure to different sources of information and disinformation. So when, let's say, a voter decides to vote for Donald Trump because she's been told that, you know, abortion is the greatest moral evil of our time, and she believes this, and she wants to, or say she wants to defend the American family. She's not arguing for major changes in the way that our government is run, right? She's really making an argument about her values, what she values in herself, and what she'd like to see happen. But the leaders of the movement, you know, the leaders of the new right, the leaders of the Christian nationalist movement, and others, and the funders of the movement, they want a whole other kind of thing. You know, they want, again, tax policies and other protective policies that benefit the super rich. I mean, we could talk about the funders, but the funders of this movement, we're talking about the billion, you know, a sector of the billionaire class. You know, Musk is
so is the God thing man. Just part of a scam, a ploy?
It's exploitation of faith for politics and power.
Well, let me ask you about that, though. So how screwy this can get when they talk about Christian nationalism and it's not really Christian at all. And here,
well, it involves religion. I mean, I would have to say, you know, there are different sectors of the movement. In Money, Lies, and God, I really distinguish between the new right, which is much more overtly anti-democratic in its ideology, but less overtly Christian nationalist. Although there are figures on the new right, such as Russell Vogt, who describe themselves as Christian nationalists. But others, to be honest, when you dig into their writings, they really don't seem to be motivated by anything more than power. And they're more defined, I think, better defined by who they hate, which is liberal than...
Right, and they want to vote for somebody who hates the same people they hate because...
Exactly.
That's the question. It's like no, well, you do, but who do you hate? So
exactly.
Recently,
but on the religious
last
right,
week,
I would say,
last week, yeah. Texas Governor Greg Abbott He's a practicing Catholic. He responded to an open letter from Pope Francis that criticized Donald Trump's mass deportation plan. In his response, Abbott stated that the Bible calls for strong borders, and he said that Jesus guided others to follow the laws of the land. This is obviously a direct ploy to try to hijack the Bible for his political agenda because, you know, there is, you know, baby Jesus was a refugee. You know, it comes from the biblical account of the Gospel of Matthew that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. King Herod learned that the new king of the Jews had been born. Herod ordered the massacre of all male infants in Bethlehem under the age of two, known as the Massacre of the Innocents. In order to escape that, they fled to Egypt, where they lived as refugees until Herod died. And after Herod's death, they returned and eventually settled in Nazareth. So this is a refugee story. This is not a story of strong borders. And this is something that, you know, Abbott, I don't, maybe if he went to one of his own Christian charter schools that he would have learned this story. But this is, you know, what's actually in the Bible. And they twist this, these types of things for their own political agenda, don't they?
This is true. They're strategically exploiting contemporary issues like immigration and gender to really galvanize support. Now, of course, immigration is an issue that governments can debate and discuss to craft the best policies. And I think that's important. But for these folks, it's not that they're taking on the issue, it's the way they frame the issue. Immigration is a really good go-to issue for authoritarians in general, because blaming the other is throughout history the preferred strategy for authoritarian leaders. It plays into people's fears. And again, this is not to dispute the fact that immigration policy needs to serve our country and be crafted in the, you know, in the best and most sensible way possible. But Trump's people have been very shameless about pumping up stories about immigrant crime and implying that all immigrants are criminals. And that sets up very sharp contrast, I would say, between the us and the them, the we, the real Americans, and they, the foreign or different elements. You know, a reasonable approach to immigration, of course, would have to balance the real needs and demands that drive immigration against transition costs and other issues. We also, frankly, have a need to deal with some past failures. So there are a lot of issues to discuss, but that's not how Trump and his closest advisors are really framing the issue at all. What's coming out of them, this administration, is not reasoned policy, but demagoguery. So the
leaders of this Christian nationalist movement, do they believe that they can, you know, wreck the economy, wreck the federal government, and then they could have it reconstituted in a way that will fit their views? Is that what they're trying to do?
I think leaders of the anti-democratic movement overall, yes. I do think that there are some fissures between, I would say, leaders of the religious right and leaders of the new right, differences in matters of sort of policy or procedure. And there are definitely huge fissures between the, but all, on the other hand, I think people like the billionaires like Musk are going to see the Christian nationalist movement is just the price of doing business. I don't think Musk himself is motivated at all by religious issues. He just, you know, is motivated by fantasies of power. But I also think that, you know, he'll put up with the sort of God in the public, you know, Bible in public schools in America as a conservative Christian nation, et cetera, if that's the way he can get the policies that he wants.
Why do they target public schools, or as they call them, government schools? Why is that such a target for them? And here we have here in Texas this religious voucher happening where they want to take money from the public school system and give it to wealthy people who attend private religious schools.
This is such an important point to discuss, because this has been such a feature of the movement for a long time. Public schools have been flashpoints of the culture war for decades. You know, when I started researching this movement 16 years ago, it was clear that the movement was deeply hostile to the institution of public education, precisely because Public schools are meant to be non-sectarian, welcoming of all families, regardless of their religious background, regardless of their politics. And they're not supposed to affirm or denigrate any particular religious viewpoint.
But they're supposed to make good Americans.
Right, exactly. But that is that neutrality that the religious right has long objected to. Jerry Falwell made the agenda really clear in 1979. He said, "I hope to see the day when there are no more public schools. Churches will have taken them over and Christians will be running them." And other powerful religious right leaders like D. James Kennedy, by the way, whose ministry received millions of dollars from the family of former Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, he said schools were atheistic and amoral, right? So the destruction of public education, as we know it, has really been a longstanding aim. But when I started researching this movement, leaders of the movement were frankly a little quiet about their ultimate aims. They were a little discreet. There were really only a few folks on the margins admitting that the end game was to starve the beast of public education, as they see it, and redirect the flow of taxpayer cash to private and religious and ideological right-wing schools. But now they're really upfront about it.
Well, but so, the thing is that that's a self-defeating policy. If you're wrecking public schools, then you're going to have populations that are not really fit to go into the workforce.
That's true. Well, what they want is to create a national network of publicly funded, like taxpayer money, yours and mine, publicly funded religious schools that explicitly favor conservative forms of religion. And they talk about this, in my research, I've attended sort of public school focused gatherings where they talk about children as strategic machinery. One speaker, Matt Staver, he's the president and co-founder of Liberty Council, one of the movement's key legal advocacy groups. He said, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, if you want to change the culture, if you want to change the direction of the cruise ship, you got to go after those young kids, age 5 through 12. He said it's the most strategic age group we have.
And you experienced this with your own daughter.
Absolutely. I mean, my whole route into this world was when a program of fundamentalist indoctrination came to my daughter's public elementary school, the Good News Club in Santa Barbara. So really, all this sort of culture war hysteria that they're raising in public schools right now with the Moms for Liberty, you know, overtaking school boards and demanding that they stop teaching critical race theory, which they're not. Critical race theory is not taught in public K through 12. They're frankly focused on reading and math scores. I can say that as a public school parent. It's all intended to foster mistrust in public education in order to soften the way for wholesale, you know, assault and the diversion of public money to private religious schools. They're actually setting up a case in Oklahoma now, the St. Isidore Academy, which they want to be a fully funded, explicitly religious charter school. This will allow force the taxpayer to have to directly fund religion, which is not at all the idea of religious freedom that our founders intended.
Yeah, and right now in the Texas legislature, which is now in session, there's over 30 bills that are being proposed that would put more religious indoctrination into the public school classrooms, including adding the Ten Commandments, giving more time for prayer in the classroom. They want to teach the Bible as a literature and do it in a way that has an obvious Christian nationalist bias.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, movement leaders have really, they've got a kind of two-pronged strategy. Number one, infuse public schools with their form of religion, which is not what, you know, progressive Christianity, which is dismissed by many movement leaders as heresy. You know, I was at a gathering recently that Turning Point USA put on. It's an annual conference called America Fest. It drew 20,000 hardcore MAGA supporters to the Phoenix, Arizona Convention Center. And the leader of Turning Point USA Faith, who spoke in several, you know, on a panel and also from the main stage, he basically took aim at the social gospel. And he said his aim is to eliminate you know, woke Jesus, as he calls it, from the American pulpit.
Woke
it's
Jesus.
Really shocking. Yeah.
We'll find out more about woke Jesus when we come back from this break. Also, Susan, I'm going to get you on the air with your phone call when we come back from the break as well. Hang on. And listeners, if you want to call in, are you concerned about what Trump and Musk are doing to the government? Do you think they are trying to burn the government down in order to have it rebuilt in some other kind of vision that's going to empower Christian nationalism? Or you think we're just full of hooey? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The book, Money, Lies, and God, Inside the Movement to Destroy American Democracy. It's written by journalist Catherine Stewart. She was also the author of The Power Worshippers Inside the Dangerous Rise of Religious Nationalism. That award-winning book was turned into a documentary feature called God and Country, produced by Rob Reiner. And we're talking about her latest book and what she has found by investigating and documenting the movement that says that democracy is no good. We need Christian nationalism. And that's why Donald Trump is in power today. You can give us a call with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Susan. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, David.
Hi.
Woke Jesus would be a good band name.
Yeah, maybe my new podcast.
I've been surmising that just complete ignorance and arrogance and greed or some combination just equals this evil that is taking over. And I heard a psychiatrist the other day say the point of it all is just cruelty and destruction. But my question is, has the author, Catherine Stewart, have you, in all your study and research, is there anything redeeming about this movement, these people, this destruction? And have you been able to develop any or cultivate any personal relationships or friendships in all of your research and study with and hanging out with these people?
Well, Susan, thank you for the call. And Catherine Stewart.
Yeah, that's a really great question. Listen, I've met a lot of honestly, really lovely people in the course of my travels. I've met a lot of people. They love their families. They care about their communities. And they really think what they're doing is best for our country. But all of their good intentions are being harnessed in service of an agenda that is really degrading our country, dividing us, and destroying our democracy. So I think a lot of the folks who are, you know, have been persuaded, for instance, you know, that abortion is the greatest moral evil of our time, or that they really care about the American family. And so they're voting, you know, or getting involved in activism on behalf of the integrity of the American family, or they believe in the sort of positive vision of America that this movement is actually, frankly, quite good at articulating. They think they're doing good works. And, you know, I don't hold it against them personally. It's really that they've been fed a line of disinformation. I mean, what we're really seeing now is the end game, which is a serious downgrading in the competence with which basic government functions are being handled. I mean, there are so many illustrations already of this. And, you know, this is a movement that, you know, thinks that all of government is evil. You know, I think a lot of Americans have been subject to kind of propaganda campaign that says, you know, government is always terrible. But we have to be reminded of all the good things that governments do, and also the very many, many bad things that happen when you have a lack of effective government or a totally corrupt government. And that seems to be where this movement is leading.
So let me ask you about some examples of that. We've seen firings at the FAA, the Federal Aviation Agency, where, you know, they're supposed to help us be able to fly around the country safely. We've had more air crashes, deadly air crashes in the last 2 months than we've had in the last 10 years since these firings have begun. We have an outbreak of the flu, strain A of the flu. That's a deadly. It's the worst in 15 years. We have a bird flu that's also out there. It's raising the price of eggs. It's also, you know, we're seeing once in a while how a person, a human being, is being infected by that. That's a concern. A measles outbreak in West Texas that's growing day by day. And the country's Health and Human Services Agency is run by an anti-vaxxer who has his worm-eaten brain. You know, how is it that this is going to protect the American people? The American people do want the government to function and keep them safe, but that's not happening.
Absolutely. I mean, we're also seeing them lay the groundwork for, I would say, absolutely epic levels of corruption.
One sure. case Elon in point Musk.
Is Musk himself. He's a legitimate subject of many investigations for his various dealings, and he's now in a position to secure favored deals for himself, and he's getting them. But of course, you know, Trump and his family have been moving with lightning speed to cash in themselves. The most extreme case is the sale of these meme coins, which have no intrinsic value.
Yeah, but who's going to buy all that stuff? These are just, you know,
the Reagan
really, file. I want to keep this conversation focused on people, just day-to-day people who want to be able to fly safely, people who don't want
exactly.
to get a horrible virus or see someone in their family infected by these diseases. We're being impacted by this stuff. I'm never going to buy those nutty meme coins, you know, and no one I know would ever do that.
A foreign dictator might buy those meme
coins. Sure, they're bribing him.
These
are all just scams to bribe, Trump. But what about this, the erosion of the quality of our government services?
Well, exactly. And it all fits together because if you have, a company that wants to promote some kind of food product that's actually poisonous and they engage in the bribing, well, all of a sudden, you know, the Food and Drug Administration doesn't have enough people sort of investigating food products to see if they're safe. Or medications that might have side effects, but we're not allowed to know about. This is the thing.
We don't even need what ifs. This is happening, now.
It's happening now. It's shocking, but it's
okay,
not.
I'm gonna go to a caller. Let's go to Claiborne. Mm-hmm. Claiborne, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Hi. A lot of alleged Christians in this country have never actually bothered to read the book. Either part of it, but the old or the new. But Orwell wrote back in 1948, which underpins this. And even when they became discontented, as they sometimes did, their discontent led nowhere because being without general ideas, they could only focus it on petty specific grievances. The larger evils invariably escaped their notice.
All right. Claiborne, thank you for that. So is the clock striking 13 for Winston right now? Are we living in 1984?
Is that for me or for Winston? I mean, I think we are living in a time of where the, you know, as you mentioned, the key functions of the government are being dismantled in ways that it's going to make all of us less safe, less prosperous, and undermine the freedoms that so many of us have benefited from.
Well, like the freedom of speech.
Time.
I mean, Trump, Musk says he's an absolutist for freedom of speech, and yet now.
Oh, but he's not. He's talking about, you know, they're purging prosecutors and FBI and justice officials. He's threatening to jail the members of the media. We've had already many of the media bosses kind of bend the knee, donating to his funds.
Or settling out of court.
Settling out of court.
Cases that they would have easily have won, like ABC or 60 Minutes, complying with these ridiculous demands. And, you know, Associated Press. I mean, what about the freedom of the press? If the Associated Press wants to say Gulf of Mexico, why should they be penalized? Why isn't that a violation of the freedom of the press?
The shocking thing is that this is a movement that claimed to stand for freedom of speech and was worried about cancellation. And we now saw a list of words that were circulated. I think it was the National Institute of Health, where they wanted to suspend any studies that were taking place that included any of these words, including woman and socioeconomic. So it's really kind of shocking. You know, this is a movement that is engaging in book banning, censorship, and speech intimidation on an epic scale.
And the word felon is banned from the White House. Let's go to a caller, Donna. Donna, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question. We know that every day that we hear Donald Trump and Elon Musk is in the news with something different, and a lot of people do not agree, and I'm not pro or against, but my thing, my focus is on this situation is that who is looking at the senators and the congressmen, the individuals who have to make the decision to make those rules? Nobody's paying attention to them. They're just sitting back quietly, and we're not knowing what's going on. We do know, but people are not focusing on them, and they're being quiet because the elections are coming up, but the public needs to know who is really making the decision in regards to all of this stuff. You know, they have Donald Trump and Elon Musk, but we're not focusing on the individuals who actually signed these bills, who passed these bills. And that's my question.
All right, Donna, thank you for that question. So the loyal opposition is more loyal than ever. Catherine Stewart.
Thank you so much, Donna, for that question. I think that a lot of the folks who are in charge of the agenda today, frankly, are the folks behind Project 2025. If you guys have heard of that, it's a 900-page document that was coordinated by the Heritage Foundation with the support of over 100 other right-wing organizations. And it was in preparation of a second Trump term, our new conservative president, as they called him.
And we've seen that put into effect, even though Trump denied that he had anything to do with it.
Exactly. And a lot of the contributors to Project 2025 are actually occupying positions in the new Trump administration. When he said he didn't know anything about it, it was just a lie. So those are the folks, you know, they kind of told us what they were going to do. And I think within the Project 2025, you can see a fusion of religious nationalism with new right ideology, this idea that they're going to smash the administrative state, they're going to infuse the government as much as possible with a reactionary version of a religion, of the Christian faith. And they're going to, take the country in a much more authoritarian direction.
Right. But if the question is, you know, where is Congress on this? You know, the Congress is controlled by the Republicans. The Senate is controlled by Republicans. They're riding along. They're not doing anything about it.
You're right. You know,
I got to take a break here.
Really,
we're going to talk more about that. I also need to get back to woke Jesus when we come back from this break. And Rick, I'm going to get you on the air too, a caller. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the lines, Catherine Stewart. Book out today. Money, Lies, and God Inside the Movement to Destroy American Democracy. She has spent over a decade investigating these groups. They kind of, the John Birch Society has grown up and has taken over the country. This is what they believe. This is what they want. And she reports on that. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. And let's go to Rick. And Rick, you're on the air.
Hey, David, Catherine, so good to hear a sound thinking process going on, because my thought is that the Trump mantra for, you know, 15 years has hijacked everything and every kind of thinking that would support democracy and freedom. And my big problem is that he's hijacked the RNC. He's hijacked Congress. He's hijacked my Christian friends who just worship him. And the disturbing thing was when I went to a church down 100 miles from here a week after January 6th, and the pastor was up there bragging about being in Washington, D.C. on January the 6th, saying how great it was. Now, these people are not going to listen to me. So how do we reach people? Because I think, David, you, me, Catherine, Ruth Ben-Ghiat, Mary Trump, we're all preaching to the choir. How do we reach our Christian brothers who, in my opinion, just don't see the light? How do we reach them?
Wow. I think that's the million-dollar question, billion-dollar question. Rick, thank you so much. Catherine Stewart, what's going on here with the stratification of our society? Everyone in their own little locked-in bubbles. People own their own truths, and they don't have to abide by the reality. So what happens?
That's a really good question. Listen, it's not an easy question. It's not going to be an easy solution. We didn't get here overnight. We aren't going to change it overnight. But we have to take note of the fact that, say, Trump lost the election by statistically a smaller margin than most American presidents who
He won the election, you mean?
He absolutely won the election, but he won it statistically by a smaller margin than, say, for instance, Joe Biden did in 2020, or other American presidents have won their elections. And if you find, there are graphs out there that show the percentages by which presidents win elections, and he's actually kind of on the narrow end. And if you look at the number of eligible voters in 2024, as compared to 2020, he actually won about the same percentage of the vote, you know, this time. But what happened was there was a decreased enthusiasm for voter turnout on the Democratic side.
Right. We have people who were upset about Biden in Gaza, other issues.
There are so many reasons.
Inflation, things like that.
Right. So the problems that we're facing, you know, I think are political problems, and they are going to require political solutions. And it's not going to be easy. It's not going to happen overnight. But one thing the right is really good at doing is turning out their people in disproportionate numbers.
Yeah, and one of the things that the left is terrible at doing is making arguments. The argument that you're making right now in this book, it's great. It's entertaining. It's interesting. It's well-reported, well-sourced, and I think it's essential, but it doesn't win elections.
Well, I think there are different kinds of messaging that can work for different populations. I think, for instance, you need compelling leadership on the other side of the political aisle that can communicate to the people in direct ways that to the issues that really affect them, you know, on a day-to-day level. And I think we really have the opportunity to do that, especially when we look at the funders of this movement, billionaires like Musk, but even the funders like that people have never heard of, people like Sean Feiler and the Corkerys and Barry Side and Tim Dunn and the Wilkes brothers,
who right,
I've heard of in Texas for sure.
These and they're are funding funders, the school voucher situation.
They're funding a lot of this movement. And here's the thing about these funders. Religiously, they're all over the place. Some are evangelical. Others are some more mainline Protestants. Some are Catholic. Others are Jewish. Some are, frankly, atheistic. But the one thing that they all agree on is the need to smash, you know, smash the so-called administrative state, which we're seeing happen before our eyes, and they're investing a portion of their fortunes in anti-democratic projects. So their agenda, they want, you know, more money for themselves, privileged contracts.
Well, how much more money do they need? I mean, there are billionaires already. I mean, you talk to the Wilkes brothers and these guys, they really do believe that they have a special relationship with the Lord, that they were given all this money and wealth and surplus in order to try to do something with it. You know, they're spending
right,
a
they
big
can
chunk
use it
of their
to,
fortune.
But what they're really after is policies that are privileging their wealth. And what the rank and file really want is a better deal for themselves and for their workforce. And a lot of these funders, even though they're, think about the DeVos Prince family juggernaut, even though they're funding some of these sort of religious right initiatives and school initiatives, they're also funding initiatives that will lead to the destruction of labor unions. So there's a real disjunction between what the rank and file want and what the funders want. And I think as life gets more expensive, as the government becomes unmanageable, doesn't work for people, they're not getting the benefits that they need or the services that they deserve, as the price of eggs doesn't go down, as the price of all goods rises because of these needless trade wars, we have the opportunity to say to the rank and file, they did this to you, and here are the people who are fighting for you.
Well, I do think that Wilkes and all these billionaires who have a vision of, you know, they have, they're very religious. I don't doubt their commitment to their faith. and they can do whatever they want with their money. I just think that we need a better elastic response that will hold our system of government in place.
Absolutely. And the Wilkes brothers, by the way, look at Barry Side. He's a Jewish Chicago billionaire. He donated $1.6 billion to form the Marble Freedom Trust. He put Leonard Leo in charge of it. Leonard Leo is an ultra-conservative
and he runs the Supreme
Catholic
Court.
Leader. Right, exactly. Well, so he's played an outsized role in shaping the Supreme Court and shaping the right-wing legal ecosphere. So the funders do come from these different backgrounds. You have some who are ultra-religious and some who are not, but they're a lot of their money is funding some of the same apparatus that is leading to the destruction of our democracy.
All right, let me get to another caller. Let's go to, is it to Jeremy? Jeremy, is that right?
Yes, sir.
All right,
yes,
sir, you're on the air. Go ahead, you're on the air.
How's it going, sir? I appreciate you taking my call. I just want to see, I mean, I know we're all up in arms about Elon Musk and Trump, but I mean, to me, there's, and I'm somewhat of a middle, leaning to the right kind of person. All they're doing is pulling the curtain back saying, look, all this money that's fraud, all this billions and millions of dollars wasted, why are we not up in arms about all that? You know what I mean? Why are we still blaming Trump and Elon for finding all the fraud? I don't understand.
Which fraud are you talking about? I don't, you know, if you don't know that, you don't find.
How about the $59 million that we're going to send this money to illegals, to house illegals? How about all the money that these people are 150 years old, 120 years old, and they're cashing checks.
That's, I mean, that was truth tested, and didn't, and so Elon Musk claimed that there were 150 year old people getting checks for Social Security, and that turned out not to be true. Also, his claim that the United States was paying for a transgender comic book in Peru, not true. He says things all the time that are not true. He is making this up. So,
but they
yeah.
have the receipts for it. The press secretary showed the receipts. All this.
Nope.
But my thing is, so Donald Trump wants a down, like, you want a small government. You don't want a big government.
But you want to fire 100 people at Pantex and Amarillo, the guys who are in charge
nothing.
Of our nuclear bombs?
They're getting rid of the education department because they're finding out that they're not doing nothing, kicking back to the states. I mean, I don't understand why y'all want more government. You want less government. You want the people
why?
To run everything. And
you
know
who's in the government?
But as far as
people.
I know, the people voted for Donald Trump. The people want change because they want God's thankful they didn't have
that's
Kamala
cool, man.
And Joe
that's
Biden.
Great. There's a process. There's a process.
But I want to know why y'all up in arms about it. Y'all should be happy that, hey, you want a downsized
well,
government.
You know, because the price of eggs keeps going up.
But why is putting America controversy? Why is that an issue of being America first? Like, I don't understand why people are up in arms about that. I mean,
right,
why
man.
Not be proud to be American?
I am proud to be an American. I mean, I sure was prouder when it wasn't a disaster, like, you know, right now. So thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. So, Catherine, your response to that.
Yeah, I would like to add something. Listen, there's always room for improvement in the government, as there is in the private sector. When you think about it, you know, could we lose, you know, the dead wood? Could we get, you know, lose 10% or 5% of the federal government, you know, government workers and make, you know, other people work harder. Sure. And things would probably go on. But at a certain point, as if you look at how like a private equity takeover of a private business, if you slash and burn too much, things simply stop working.
Planes fall out of the sky when you make arbitrary and random cuts to the FAA.
And then they also want to get rid of things like the Consumer Protection, Fraud Protection Bureau.
Yeah, because
which is
who
actually
wants to get in the way of me selling my, you know, my, you know, corrupt crypto coins?
Well, it actually has delivered, you know, billions of dollars to American citizens who've been the subject of fraud, and they're getting rid of that. They just want to make it easier for businesses to defraud the people. I mean, I think that, you know, at a certain point, people also know that there are some corporations that are simply out to fleece people. I mean, there's a reason
trust
why the
Elon
health
Musk?
Insurance industry is so
Do you
hated.
Trust him with your
well,
Social
you
Security, with your tax information?
Do
really?
Do you trust his 19-year-old minions?
Yeah,
his
the Muscovites.
Security?
No,
the
thank
Musk
you.
Of them, the little kids. I mean, you know, I have a
So and the
child
part of your book is about
age.
how to you know, get together, how to fight back, how to stand up for your rights. and, you know, how to make America work for you. I want to thank you so much, Catherine Stewart. Her new book is Money, Lies, and God Inside the Movement to Destroy American Democracy. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much.
That's The Source. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Technical support by Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, and Yvette Benavides. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.